I have to take my slobber ball out. I would like to thank Robert for the opportunity to be able to come and speak with y'all. Thank the elders and the brethren here for allowing it to happen. And what you've got going on is a very, very good program. And if we had the number of people, I hadn't spoke to this number of people here since I was in the Army, speaking to my platoon. So, you know, it's different for me being able to talk to a pretty decent-sized congregation. And tonight we're going to look at, does my integrity compare? So if you would turn your Bibles to the book of Job. That's the one we're going to be studying tonight, is good old Job. And Robert informed me, well, actually he told me in an asking way that I needed to speak at least 30 minutes, but I'm not a long talker. And I know that might just aggravate some of y'all, but some of y'all is going to tickle pink. So, you know, I say what I have to say, and that's it. Because I can't go into it. But anyway, we live in the best of times as well as people would say the worst of times. And by the best of times, I mean we've got the cell phone. Back in my younger days, we was on a party line that had like 12 to 14 people, and you was lucky if you ever got a call off. And you never got a call off where someone wasn't listening to you. So, you know, we had some gossipers all around Bear Creek. But now that is one handy little tool. I'm not that crazy about it. But it is nice to have if you're out somewhere and you have an accident, and you need to call for help. It will come in handy for something like that. And we have the internet for the best of times. You know, you can look up a lot of wonderful, wonderful scriptural stuff on the internet. We have the TV, even in color. You know, 3D and all that kind of neat stuff. And you can spread the word to the whole world through television. There's not many countries that doesn't have TV. But every country just about has radio. And radio is another way to be able to spread the gospel. And we have the automobiles versus the horses and the buggy. And the airplanes to get us from point A to point B in just a matter of hours going thousands of miles. And there's more money available now in this day and time than there was when I was a child. But of course, everything costs a whole lot more too. The money's not worth what it was back in them days. But we're going to look a little now at the worst of times. And could they not be considered pretty much the same as the best of times, because a cell phone can be used for evil. The internet's used for evil. You watch the TV programs we see now, and for some odd sort of reason, the people on television are losing more and more of their clothes each and every month. When we were stationed in Germany, they had soap operas over there. And let me talk, when they showed a love scene over there, they showed the whole thing. And I'm afraid one of these days that this country is heading pretty much down that same road as the European countries. They don't care. They don't believe in morals. They have virtually none. And nowadays, both parents usually have to work in order for a family to make a living. Even though we're making more money, things are costing so much more that both parents usually have to work. And I was fortunate that my mother never had to work. Daddy provided a living and Mama raised the kids. And off and on, my wife had to work, but there was times that she didn't work and she could be a stay-at-home mom. But, you know, and a lot of it in this day and age, they do it because everybody seems to want to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. Want these new cars, new house. And not just any new house, but I want me one of them great old big ones, fancy ones. And got to wear the name brand clothes. Pay $300 for a pair of tennis shoes. And all this is well and good, you know, if you've got the money to do it. But if you do it just to keep up with your neighbor, who may actually have the money, and you stay in debt above your eyeballs the rest of your life, then you've really not accomplished nothing. And we are told that God comes first. And if we put God first, then His money should come first. Above and beyond any bill that we ever make, that should be the number one thing, is we should put into our mind how much money God's going to get, whether it's 10%, 5%, 20%, but we do that before we make any bills. And then God don't never lose His money. Instead of making the bills and then giving God what little bit we have left. And that's what I'm afraid the people are doing more so today. We want the life of luxury. You know, and no matter what it costs us, and we'll do just about anything to get it. Eat, drink, and be merry. That's this country's motto. And Robert's been to other countries. And the poorest man in this country is richer than 80% of the world's population. And we don't know how good we have it over here. I do. Robert does. If you haven't been fortunate enough or unfortunate enough, ever how you want to look at it, to go overseas and see how some of these third world nations live, then you cannot appreciate fully what we have over here. And even though we may not have a lot, I would like to ask you a question. And I'd like you to think pretty serious on this. You know, how would you feel that everything that you have worked for, your whole life, was taken from you in less than 1 hour? You know, would you sit down and cry about it and weep about it and moan and groan about it? Or would you ask, why me, Lord? Or would you cause or curse the very being that gave you all that stuff to begin with? Or would you just take it in stride and say, I'm going to start all over and continue on from there? And some people will think that a loving God would not do that to them. He wouldn't make one of His children suffer in this way. God Himself may not do it, but He may very well allow Satan to do it for him. As a matter of fact, He did just that to the man that God himself said, there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man. And this man's name was Job. And that came out of Job 1 and verse 8. So once upon a time, there was the richest man in the land of Uz. He had sheep, camels, oxen, donkeys, and umpteen dozen servants. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. Now this man would get up and offer burnt offerings for each one of his children, just in case they may have cursed God in their heart. And he did this every day or continually. How many of us, when we say our nightly prayers, include our children and grandchildren and things in our prayers every time we say them? Something to think about. But Job did this every day. So you know for a fact that Job loved his children beyond belief. Now, I'm going to read to you verses 6 through 12, and this is Satan's request to God here. It says, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? That there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made an hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hand, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. This right here ought to make people realize just how powerful Satan really is. You know, we're fixing to look at just what he did to Job. The first messenger come by and told Job about losing the oxen and the donkeys and all the servants he lost, except himself was left alive. And while he was yet speaking, another messenger came and told him about losing all the sheep and all of those servants except himself. And while he was yet speaking, another servant came to tell him about losing all of his camels, and all of those servants was killed except himself also. Now here was the one, or the straw we could say that broke the camel's back, so to speak, is when this last servant came and told Job that there has been a great wind that has come and destroyed your son's home and all 10 of your children are dead. And that's in all this has come from Job 1, verses 13 through 19. Now, what did Job have to say about this? Job, it says in verse 20 of chapter 1, it said, "Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshiped and said, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Now you remember the questions that I asked you? How many of us would have been able to have said that? It's not bad enough just to lose everything that we have worked for, but to have lost your entire family except your wife, you know, that had to be hard. That had to be totally devastating to him. But as we go on in chapter 2, Satan, he's back in heaven and confronts God once more. And God asked Satan the same question again, and that is, what are you up to? What are you doing? And Satan's reply is virtually the same, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. And that's verse 2 of Job's 2. Seems like what Peter tells us in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, you know, still kind of goes on in this day and age here. It says, "Our adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about, seeking whom he may devour." So he's still walking to and fro and walking up and down the earth, seeing what mischief he can get into or what problems he can cause each and every one of us. In verses 3 through 8 of chapter 2, it says, "And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now, and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto the crown of his head, and he took him a potsherd and to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes." Now, I don't know if any of you have had a boil, but they are extremely painful, and Satan put these all over his body. But God told Satan that Job had integrity. Now, I'm not trying to question anybody's intelligence here, but the Webster's Dictionary defines integrity as completeness, unimpaired condition, soundness, honesty, sincerity. That's what integrity is. Now in verse 9, Job's wife tells him, "Why don't you just go ahead on and curse God? Basically, get it over with and go on and die and get out of this pain." And here's what Job tells her. He says, "But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. Now Job, he gets a visit from three of his friends in verses, chapter 2, verses 11 through 13. They come to visit him. And they see him afar off and actually cannot recognize him. So they rent their clothes. And they go and they sit with Job. For 7 days and seven nights they sat there without saying a word, because they knew, they could see and felt the pain that Job was in. And Solomon said, you know, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And that's Proverbs 17 and 17. And that's a fact. If you have a true, true friend, that individual will stand by you through anything. But Job, you know, finally, he curses his birth in chapters 3, verses 1 through 19. And he longs for death in chapter 3, verses 20 through 26. And through all of this, the loss, the suffering, the pains that he went through, Job did not curse or blame God one single time. And God knew that he wouldn't, but Satan didn't. God knew what Job was capable of doing. It was not a shock to God that Job did not curse him. But it was a shock to Satan. God also knows our hearts. He knows our ways. And he also knows just how much one of us can take. You know, he won't go no further than what we can deal with. And I'm tell you, I'm living proof of this. You know, I go through a lot with the war. But, you know, he gives me breathing space, something to do to take my mind off of it. But God, because of Job's righteousness, God doubled all of his material blessings and gave him 10 more children. Now, at my age, that would be a curse. You know, I could not handle 10 more kids. Ain't no way. But he gave him his 10 kids, gave him back everything double for being the righteous man that he was. Could you or I bear the loss and the suffering that Job endured? Would our integrity compare to that of Job? You know, sometimes it is difficult for us to do the things that we know that we are supposed to do. And I believe this is especially true when it comes to repenting of one's sin, become a member of the Lord's church, or rededicate ourselves when we've gotten lax in God's service, or redirecting our lives when we've gotten off track. And it's not a knowing problem that we have, because we know the Bible. Most everybody in here knows the Bible. We know what God tells us to do. So it's not a knowing problem that we have. The problem that we have is a doing problem, is it not? You know, we know what God commands for us to do. We know how to become a Christian, and it tells us how to maintain and to remain a Christian throughout our everyday walk of life. So it's not that we don't know it, it's just that we don't do it. So why don't we do it? And I think this can come from a lack of moral courage. Now, I'm not talking about sheer bravery here. I'm not talking about the soldiers that fight on the battlefield or the fireman that rushes into a blazing house to save someone's life. I'm not talking about that type of courage. The courage I'm talking about is moral courage, the capacity to act. Because we are compelled by God to act in some way. That's the type of courage that we have to have. So how is our integrity? And I want to change the integrity is how is our honesty? Let's be honest with ourselves. You know, the one sitting beside you, or in front of you or behind you, they don't know what goes on in your mind and in your heart. Only you and God know what goes on in your mind and in your heart. And we make mistakes. And a lot of times we let our pride stand in the way of coming forward and getting the forgiveness for our sins that God so graciously offers through the blood of His Son. There'll be an invitation song sung, I assume. Okay, so and during that invitation song, if you have any questions, the slightest itty-bitty doubt whether you're right with God or not, don't let Satan glue your feet to the floor. Because if God is compelling you to do something and reaching into your heart to let you step out into the aisle and to come forward and to confess your faults or to become a member of His church, and you do not, then you have let Satan win again. And you can't put it no other way, because there's only going to be two ends to our life when we have an eternity. We're either going to go to heaven or we're going to go to hell. There's no middle ground. So when the invitation song is sung, and if you have any doubt, please, please, I beg of you to come while together we stand and sing.